What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Central Virginia Sport Performance Podcast. My name is Jay DeMeo, and today I am fired up to be able to sit down and talk training hoopers and some biomechanics with Dr. Adam Petway. Doc, stoked you could spend some time with us today, man.
Coach, thanks for having me. I'm such a big fan of all the material you put out, and it's really just an honor to sit down and talk shop with you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm stoked to not just be able to have this time, but welcome you to the CVAST family down in Richmond, Virginia, July 15th and 16th at the Short Pump Marriott. It's going to be an absolute blast, man. Like we were talking a little before, I talked with Zach the other day about how cool it's going to be to have so many different people with different like educational backgrounds and biomechanics to talk different parts of sport during that barbecue. It's going to be I can't wait for that. Like just to be able to sit back and be a fly on the wall is going to be a blast.
Oh yeah. I can't wait. I got my notepads ready and I'm probably going to take in way more than I give out. So it's just going to be a great weekend. And I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, let's give everybody a little bit of the quick background here. You know, how'd you get up there to DC? And then let's get into kind of what your project you're working on also while you're up there.
Yeah. I've pretty much worked on every level of basketball. I started as a high school coach, coaching ninth grade and doing strength and conditioning for varsity and JV as well. From there, I went to a Division III school, was also a tactical coach, helped recruiting, helped, break down film, things of that nature. But I quickly realized I loved the physical preparation for the game of basketball more so than I did coaching. So from there, I kind of transitioned. Went to a couple of different mid-major schools, worked my way up through the ranks, and finally got an opportunity at a Power Five school. From there, I really got into, some speed power. So, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of great track and field athletes at one of the universities I previously worked at. And that kind of led me down a rabbit hole into looking at, projectile physics and biomechanics in the kinesiology department there. So I kind of interfaced and linked up with all of the great researchers, I had the opportunity to collaborate with on campus. So from there, I went to Philadelphia and had the opportunity to learn under some great mentors in sports science, strength and conditioning, the technical tactical aspects of things. And that's when I really had an opportunity to really dive deep in, kinetic and kinematic factors that influence the sporting activity of basketball. So that's kind of where my passion lies. We can get a little more granular in my journey in developing that passion. But that's essentially, the quick overview of how I came into, my current journey and where, my passion currently lies.
And that dive into the biomechanical breakdown, the sport of basketball, has you working on a pretty cool project right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's been about a 4 or 5 year journey through this project. And just going back, one of my biggest mentors in speed power and maybe my biggest influence as it relates to how I like train basketball athletes is Coach Boo Snicksnyder, a horizontal jumps coach from LSU. Coach multiple Olympic champions, world champions, NCAA champions. Also just a really just tactical, great strength coach, unbelievable strength coach and blending, what they're doing on the track and sequencing menu items to facilitate the desired adaptations throughout a training year. In working with some of the speed power athletes on campus at the University of Arkansas, I called him up and just said, hey, come in, do an in-service. I know you consult, I saw you speak. I need to figure this thing out because, I had the opportunity to work with some, pretty high level, sprinters and jumpers at a young age. So I was like, man, I really need to figure this thing out. And man, that was probably the pivot point into me looking at things differently. Cause previously I was a basketball coach. I was a basketball strength coach. And he basically said, he looked at my weight room, looked at what we were doing. And, he said, okay, what's the projection angles out of the block? Like, I don't know. He was like, all right, what's the flight to contact times, as he hits his drive phase. And I was like, well, I don't know. And then he was like, okay, well, what does he look like going around the turn, getting into, like, you know, the more speed endurance aspects of his race? And I was like, well, I don't know. So, you know, he brought me out to the track and just said, okay, like, you know, watch how they move and watch, you know, what they're doing in practice. And that will kind of dictate, like, and guide what your training might look like. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. So fast forward, you know, a couple of years, and, you know, I believe I was in Philadelphia at the time. And for my continued education, I was kind of at a crossroads, and I was like, oh, what should I do this year? We got a couple of weeks off, so I just called up Coach Boo, and I was like, hey, Coach, can I just observe you in your environment for a couple of weeks? And that was probably one of the best continued education things I ever did, because, you know, I had the opportunity. He was like, yeah, sure, come down here to Baton Rouge. You can sleep on my couch. You know, I rode to and from the track with him every day. We don't go eat crawfish after, you know, practice. So it was just great. And I had the opportunity to just ask him questions and observe him and how he operates in his environment. And I'll never forget, we just talked about, you know, different reading material. And there was a bunch of books on his desk, and I just kind of went through them. And he had all the training manuscripts, a lot of the really old stuff from, you know, Bompa, Vergashansky, a lot of Fred Wilt stuff. So a lot of the older stuff you'd expect. And, you know, I came across a couple of books that really kind of gauged my interest as far as, like, training manuals. One was The Mechanics of Athletics by Jeffrey Dyson, you know, a great book written in the 1960s about, you know, biomechanics and physics, things that we know to be true as far as Newtonian laws and things of that nature in the first half of the book. And then the second half of the book is how you would apply that to a track and field setting. So what are, you know, the projection angles coming off the board in a long jump? What's the centrifugal forces in a hammer throw? So taking the physics and biomechanics that we know to be true and applying it to the technical and tactical aspects of the sporting activity of track and field. There was also another book by James Hay. It was the Techniques and Biomechanics of Sport. James Hay, really interesting guy, was a professor at Iowa. You know, he was a guy from New Zealand that really just was a free thinker and abstract for his time. And again, the first part of the book being, you know, physics and biomechanics, things that we know to be true. The second half is applying that to technical aspects of different sports. And he had a chapter on basketball, but it was more so, okay, what's the coefficient of restitution when you dribble a basketball? Or what's the parabolic flight path as you take a jump shot, or the trajectory and the, you know, elbow and shoulder kinematics when you shoot? So, you know, I took all this and kicked it around a little bit, and Coach Boone and I talked, and I was like, well, what if you took these principles that, you know, Dyson and Hay talk about in the first part, and then you applied it to tactical situations relative to the game of basketball? And so he was like, man, that's a game changer. He's like, Adam, if you can do that, that would be great. So, you know, I sat on it and ruminated on it for probably a year and just kind of built out, talked to some people in my network. And then COVID hit. So it was the perfect opportunity to really dive deep into, like, a really robust project like that. So I called up to one of my friends that's, you know, he's a tactical coach in the NBA, one of my best friends. And I said, hey, what do you think about this project? He was like, it's perfect. He was like, I know the methodologies. I know how we do it. So essentially what we did is we took the top 10 performers in each movement categories, both offensively and defensively in the NBA. And we de-identified everything. So no one knows who it is, but essentially points per possession on offense and the least amount of points per possession on defense is how we classified success in top 10 for ball screen situations, transition, offense and defense, dribble handoff, isolation, post-ups. So different tactical situations in basketball. And then we just took all the Newtonian physics from, you know, that have been proven again and again from the scientific process and modeled out, okay, what are our best performers look like? You know, what's the trunk angle lane and centripetal acceleration during a dribble handoff? What's the lateral ground reaction forces and hip abduction velocity in ball screen guard situations? What's the jump strategy when you block a shot? So the world best shot blockers, do they use more of a hip or knee dominant strategy? And what's the hip and knee kinematics involved with coming from help opposed to posting up and then going straight up with, is it one or two arms? Do you jump off of 1 foot or 2 feet? So using the game as kind of a roadmap and perceptual grid to model out different tactical situations within the game of basketball. So, you know, 4 or 5 year project, but it's finally coming to fruition. And, you know, we got a great graphic designer that did Carl Lewis and Tom Telez's book, The Art of the Sprint. Our publisher is one of the best guys like I've met in a long time, Yosef Johnson, that you've done a lot of work with. And, you know, Coach Boo's riding the forward, and then Todd Wright, the VP for the Clippers and assistant coach, is also riding the forward.
That's a lot to wrap your head around, man. Like that's you call that a robust project. I think that's being that's being pretty modest, you know. I mean, I'm sure just collecting all that data was, as you so kindly said, a robust project, let alone starting to dive through it and starting to evaluate all of these things.
Yeah, no, the process took forever. And luckily, it was definitely a COVID project, so I had ample time. But yeah, so we just used Dartfish to model out an import video using Newtonian physics. We had different joint angles. We had the sequencing of joint angles. You could look at displacement of center of mass, the rate of change of displacement of center of mass. And then if you knew like different limb length and anthropometric measures, and you knew body mass, you could pretty much model out all of the kinetic and kinematic factors involved with these movement patterns. So one of the things that we did that I thought was really creative as well is we took all of the NBA combine data from the last 20 years and created normative values for, you know, height, weight, wingspan, things like that, and also the performance metrics. So, you know, what's their approach jump versus their CMJ? What does their lane agility look like? What's their three-quarter court sprint? So we aggregated, I believe it was over 1,200 subjects, and just created normative values. And then we looked at, okay, what are these means relative to the high performers in each group? And what we found is trends, things you would think that are logical, like obviously your best shot blockers are going to be taller with more like longer reach, things like that. But there was also some things that were unexpected as far as court transitions and the ability to change direction and redistribute your center of mass. So I thought it was a really creative way to use data that's public and then aggregate it and use it in a way that, okay, what are the means and normative values of like the world's best athletes? And how does that compare to everybody that's been through that process since the year, I think, 2001?
That's pretty dope. And I think that like one thing that people would probably need to wrap their head around first when you look at the game of basketball is how much of it is not forward. Like how just a vast majority of the movement is side to side and backwards.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself. Yeah.
And that's the brilliance of Todd. You know, he was, you know, an early adopter of 3D training and three-dimensional. And I'm not even advocating that this book change your general physical preparation, but let's say it's really after watching all that film, the chunking at which I can like process information and look and communicate to technical and tactical coaches is so much better. So it's like, okay, you know, ball screen defense, we know a principal component is lateral ground reaction forces, the magnitude and direction. And we know hip abduction velocity is also like a KPI in that movement. And then I look at them in the weight room and they can't do a lateral lunge. Well, okay, maybe that's a general quality we need to address in a specific context. And we just use the game as our evaluation process for the intervention.
So wait a minute, you're trying to tell me that if you reverse engineer the sport, you have a better chance of being able to have better transfer of training?
Makes sense, right? Yeah.
You know what? That just might work.
Yeah.
That just might work.
Yeah.
I love it though, man, because I think this is the thing too. The game that we're lucky to be part of is so freaking chaotic. And another topic of conversation that is outside the book is it's probably also the only sport that can be dominated more by the referee than by the player. And before anybody starts saying, here's Jay whining about calls and this and that, listen, okay? If B gets two quickies in the first quarter and he's got to sit, that's bad news, Bears.
Yeah.
If my big guy or my point guard gets two quickies in the first half, that's bad news, Bears. Should they not foul? Of course not. Are they all fouls? You know?
Yeah. No, for sure. You know, it's such an interesting game, and the amount of variability of movement that's involved is just it's just unbelievable, really. So when you look at this type of work, as far as modeling out in-game situations, well, it's usually in sports that have low variability. So if you work in track and field or swimming, and your dependent variable is time relative to a fixed distance or how you hurl and implement through time and space, well, variability is really low. So it's easier to reverse engineer and create, you know, inverse dynamics and things like that. Well, when you add a 94 by 50 foot hardwood perimeter, you have four teammates, five opponents, two 10 foot hoops and a ball you have to shoot in, it just adds like a layer of complexity that makes it really difficult to do these types of projects. And then on top of that, you add the human error aspect of like officiating a game, and it just makes it chaos. And that's what we do is just operate in a chaotic environment. But the impetus behind this project was just to add maybe a roadmap to navigate through the chaos, I would say.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, you know, because again, especially with how just there is such little known when it comes to KPIs and what matters and how things need to develop, that especially in the sport of basketball, there are so many different just methods and philosophies and thoughts, and there seems to be success behind all of them. But being able to look through the forest, you know, for the trees and be able to see what are the things that actually may have a positive net outcome on sporting activity versus what may just happen, you know, not necessarily because of, but in spite of, right, is really important. Really, really important.
Yeah. And Jay, ultimately, and I watched hours of film for this thing, hours of film. And ultimately, if you could reduce basketball movement and the ability to be successful in basketball, it's probably the ability to create space on offense to get a high percentage shot for your best player, and the ability to occupy space defensively to force a contested low percentage shot. And if you can do that, probably, you know, that's taking care of a lot of your bases. Now, again, there's high degrees of variability and there's human error involved in the officiating and things like that. But if you can create space offensively and occupy space defensively, well, that you know, covers a lot of big rocks, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. And that's just typical invasion games, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's basketball, soccer, lacrosse, field hockey, ice hockey. It's
absolutely
just create and fill space and go from there.
Yeah. No, so I think future projects for sure. Well, first, I got to close this one out. But future projects is replicating this type of work in other sporting environments. And not only that, on different levels, what do the best collegiate athletes look like? What do the best high school athletes look like? Is there a discrepancy between international and NBA? So I think there's a lot of, you know, this is the first edition of what hopefully is several editions of this type of work for me, you know?
That's rad, dude. That's rad. I love it. And I'm stoked to be able to dive into that. I can't wait for you and Yosef to get that finished, because I think that's going to help all of us like a lot.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I don't even think just basketball either. I think if you're able to be to open up and look at it from 15,000 feet, it doesn't matter if it's basketball or hockey or lacrosse or whatever. Like, if you can look at how these things were broken down, you can then use these processes to evaluate for yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's all relative to your environment. Yeah. So if you understand, the demands of the sporting activity, you can reverse engineer and apply it to your population. No doubt. You know, the first, 70, 80 pages of the book are just basic biomechanical and physical principles that we all have to abide by. So, I mean, we all operate under, three-dimensional time and space, gravitational acceleration. I mean, we all live in the same physical world and environment. It's just the demands of your sport may have some degrees of variance within that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that when we're talking about being able to look at things and break them down and peel the layers back the onion, that's a great lead in here to the big three questions. So let's dive into these here, bud. So, you know, I think that one thing too, like, you don't do what you did and all this work, change your first name to doctor. You know, if there aren't mistakes or things that you think that we can do better or ways to evaluate what we all do and grow, if that's not something that's really important to you. So the first one I think is going to be pretty sweet here. If you wouldn't mind, let's wrap a little bit about a mistake that you see made in strength and conditioning, whether it be in America or around the world. And what are some things that you feel like we could do a little differently to correct some of these issues?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. As stated previously, I pretty much worked on every level of basketball, going from the spectrum of high school all the way to the NBA. And I would say so many times we get, you know, young interns and, you know, apprentice type positions that go from, you know, undergrad, maybe they did an internship right into the NBA. So it doesn't allow the platform to make mistakes, which in my opinion is the best teacher. When I look back at my growth exponentially as a professional, I always kind of look at my time at high school in Division III with such admiration, because it gave me the platform to really just mess up and do it at a low level. So I would urge young coaches to take those jobs, man, like, and then embrace it in your environment. It takes probably 3 years to build like a training system. If you're always leaving to go internship to different job, and you're always chasing the grass is greener mentality, well, you don't have the opportunity to kind of plant roots and make those mistakes that help you grow. So I see it all the time where it's like, you know, maybe, you know, we get a kid that's coached for 6 months and then gets an internship, and you put him out there on the floor, and it's just like a disaster. And if you make a mistake on this level, you know, it could stick with you. Where if you had done that with a high school kid, which I did, and I still make mistakes every day, you know, I'm guilty of it, but I've made enough mistakes in my past to know what not to do in the future. If I just stepped into this arena right away, man, it would be very, very difficult to navigate everything you have to without my previous experiences. So I would say embrace where you're at and grow it. Don't always be looking to, you know, with the advent of just so much information being out there, it's like, you know, young coaches are always looking for the next best thing. I would say, you know, go coach at a local high school or Division III or Division II school, make those mistakes, and then that'll prepare you when you do get that next opportunity, you know, but kind of embrace that journey and that process. Because again, working at every level of basketball, I think so fondly of my times, you know, interning and being a volunteer or working at a high school or working in the Division III level. Like those were formative years for me for a lot of different reasons. So embrace those opportunities. Don't just be looking to chase like what a good sounding job is or what a logo might entail. Not to say that couldn't be the ultimate goal, but if you want to be good on a high performance level, you have to make some of those mistakes early, you know?
I dig it, man. And I think that it couldn't have been said better that people just go for their 6 months and move. And while I do feel there's a ton of value, if someone were to be able to, and I'm just going to name drop here, spend 6 months with like an Alan Bishop at Houston and learn about how he feeds the guys and what he does, you know, following more of the Poliquin principle type ideas, right? And then maybe go out to Stanford with Mike Chapman and learn more of the lifting aspect, like the actual weightlifting aspect of it. And then get in someplace, you know, to be under you for a bit as an intern, or like an Ed out in LA, where they can see the professional side of it and like how different that is, so that they can understand how you need to be different with the best of the best, you know, versus, you know, maybe like a lower level walk-on is able to do different things and things of that nature. Not that there's anything wrong with your walk-ons, everybody calm down. But I feel that there's like a huge value to being able to do something like that comma, but if you're not the one doing it, it's different. So being in a situation where you're in a job for 2, 3, 4 seasons, so you can, it's real easy to say, oh yeah, we trained for 6 weeks and then everything was awesome. Well, it's like, well, especially in college and with you guys, like these cats never stop. Like,
yeah,
we were talking before about these rules and everything. Like, you have no clue, like, what has been good, bad, or indifferent. You're just looking at it through a microscope of, oh, the past 10 weeks. Well, what did, I mean, like, especially with us, like, I got 4 guys are going to start that are all over 23 years old. Like, what have their last 5 years been like?
Right.
Like, that's going to dictate more of what they're going to do than how they feel on October 12th. You know, like, what have we built? What are they, what do we know that they're good at and bad at? What they need to work on? And what, if we have practice after, what makes them feel better for practice versus, you know, when they do it, they go out and either they're in their own head or they're broke and they can't shoot or whatever. Like, what, right, what are you going to do for that guy or that woman on your roster that's going to help them do what they're there to do? That's the fun.
Yeah, no, yeah, no doubt. And Jay, so, and then you make a great point. What, remind me, what year is this for you at Richmond?
Moon's, so I got here in January 2004. I started with Moon in 2005.
2005.
So there may actually be people listening to this who weren't alive when I started.
Exactly. Here. So, and let me ask you this. And I know, you know, just from hearing you speak and knowing you personally, it's like you're always growing and changing and tweaking things. But how many years do you feel like it took you to set up your system there where it kind of like was operational and like a performance model?
Oh, man. This is going to sound like such a cop out, but it never is set.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we've had systems that have worked temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
But whether it be player personality or just personnel in general, you know, like when these guys were all freshmen, those 2 years, because I've got 2 6th years and 3 5th years. That what we were doing was completely different than what we're doing now. You know, like, and I think that understanding what they've done has allowed us to build a system, you know, and has allowed us to kind of reinvent ourselves and come all the way back, you know, like sometimes even looking at metrics and things of that nature when they're younger and they've never done anything, like that just gets in the way. You know, and then they fight it instead of just letting them go and finding ways to put those things in with the workouts without them realizing, you know, that you're tracking things.
Right.
You know, right. There's just a whole different like array of things. But I think that the overall principle behind it of giving them what they need, not what they can handle, like all the things that Joseph talks about and Hank talk about. You know, we still like to say minimal effective dose. I don't really know if that's the right term, but
right,
optimal right. training dose, whatever, is still what it's all about for us. You know, it's just baby steps, get a little better each day and growing. But yeah, it's to make a short story long, I don't know if you ever truly, if you ever think you have a system set that is going to work, that's the minute you're going to fail.
Right.
So like, especially with these kids, man, they're just different. They're different dudes and they're old. I mean, like we might be older than the Thunder, like in all seriousness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so how you got to handle these guys has got to be different.
For sure. No, absolutely. You know, I was at Arkansas 5 years and it took me probably year 4. Was when, as far as like the evaluation bled into the training, where the technical and tactical staff kind of, where we all had synergy across the board. Not to say the system was set and it ran and it was operational, regardless of what I was doing. We were constantly tinkering things and changing things based on the environment and the readiness of the athlete, overall like preparedness and what we're looking at. But I think to your point, it takes time to kind of develop. And then if you're constantly changing environments and moving from one thing to the next, or changing philosophies is what I see in a lot of strength coaches. Like, oh, I saw the PRI, we got to do that. Or this guy is a shoulder specialist and I got to do that. Or, hey, this guy is a, you know, a movement specialist and I got to do that. So it's just, I think to your point, changing environments, but also changing like methodology seems to be pretty popular in some of the novice coaches that I've been around lately.
Dude, 100%. And I think that the two best things that happened to me in the last 2 years when it comes to that is being more open to involving more people in what we do, and us being moved into this facility and it being, well, I've talked about this a billion times. Like, it was Beecher and Mike and Adam when we were having fellowship down there lifting and solving all the world's problems. I mean, like, all of them, period. Like, the world would be perfect in our mind.
Right.
They would just listen to us when we're lifting. Probably not the best idea, but now having Sarah and Andy and Beach and I over here and being able to like pick things apart, you know, I don't think I would have been doing that if it wasn't for, you know, the unfortunate situation that COVID was. And then we had two staff members turn over and brought in a former player who's been around to multiple schools, that brought in some unique insight because he understands how we used to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's seeing how we do things. And now he's kind of a good bridge back from, like, you know, the 2009 to 12 era, like when he was in school, and what he's seen successful in other places.
Right.
And then another coach who's been really open and diving into all the return to play stuff and building out programs and what works here, there, and other places. And they've challenged me to be a lot better. And it's been good, man. Like, it's been good because it's helped me take a step back and not look at exactly what I'm doing, but like have other people tear it apart and learn why people don't necessarily see it the same way. Because there's holes in all our games, man. Like,
for sure.
And we don't see them because we might think that we got it. You know, again, like, if you think you got the answers, that's when you're going to get in trouble. And being able to just step back and listen to these guys and listen to Spence, and it's been really helpful. Like, it's changed a lot, you know. And like a lot of things that have happened, you know, I give him a lot of credit, but I think a lot of it started, like, it made me really get into this and find better ways when I had a talk with Charlie about all these Achilles issues.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, because he's just sitting there throwing you BP and all of a sudden he drops your curveball. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything I'm doing is wrong. And I need like 10 people to, you know, audit what I'm doing, because he's very rarely not on with his assumptions on things. So,
right.
It's been fun though, man. Like, that's the best part, right? Is digging in deeper and being able to make those dissections.
Yeah, no, it's always great when you can bring in an unbiased, objective party to kind of audit you. And then, you know, I think a lot of coaches aren't asking the right questions if they're asking any questions at all. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think the scientific process and how you objectively help your athletes always starts with a good question. And I think a lot of coaches aren't currently questioning themselves enough or even asking any questions, you know?
100%, man. And I think that that's a great transition here to the second question. And that is, you know, looking along continuing education lines, like, where do you see coaches needing to expand and be better? And what are some directions that you think that they need to go in to be better professionals?
Right. No, a very, very good question that, you know, I'm very passionate about. I would say for a young coach, filtering all the information is difficult because there's so much out there these days. It's really, really tough. So I don't necessarily, if you're like a 22, 23 year old GA and you're trying to figure out, you know, okay, what do I learn this summer? What conference do I go to? Who do I speak to? It's pretty tough. Most of the people that I confide in to be audited or just reach out to are people that have had sustained success over long periods of time. So like when you're looking to get a mentor or mentorship, you know, if you're 23, your oldest mentor probably shouldn't be 34. You know, you have, you know, people that have had sustained success over long periods of time and a track record of doing things the right way. Another thing is like, as far as the continued ed is, observe people in their environment. The whole impetus behind this book started from me just calling Coach Boo and just say, hey, can I spend a week with you down in Baton Rouge? And, you know, it was a world champs year. So we'd ride to the track together. I would watch him train his athletes. We'd go in the weight room. You know, I'd have the ability to ask questions before and after and during. You know, he was gracious enough where I slept on his couch for a week. So, you know, we'd have breakfast and dinner together. So it was just an awesome opportunity and probably the best continued education informally, I guess, if that's what you want to consider it, that I've ever done. So I would say pick people that have had sustained success over long periods of time and reach out to them and say, hey, can I observe you in your environment? Because I've been around a lot of guys that are good presenters and can, you know, put together a really good PowerPoint. And there's nothing wrong with that. But then when you observe them in their environment, there's a discrepancy with what they're doing and what they say they do. So you can kind of get fooled or get the curtain pulled over you by that one. So pick a mentor that's been doing it a while and go observe them in their environment and see how they problem solve and see how they handle certain issues. You know, that week was just exponential in how I viewed things and how to solve problems. I think that was that's a piece of advice for continued education I would definitely give young coaches.
I love that, man, because I do. I think that, you know, all too often people look at what they see on Instagram or what they see in a lecture or a YouTube video. Do people even do YouTube videos anymore? I don't know. Maybe I'm just dating myself there, but you know, they look at those things and they think that this is the way it is. But in reality, you know, when the rubber meets the road, it's not necessarily what you're going to see.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just filtering all the information, you know, just going back 10 years. I mean, if you look at just the content that's out and the volume of content, that's why, you know, everything you do and put out, like I would be a big advocate and proponent of, just because you've gone through the process and you've been at one place since the mid 2000s, you've had sustained success over long periods of time. You can't do that if you're not doing things somewhat of the right way and doing things with like, you know, objective and asking questions to problem solve. Like you can't just, okay, here's what we're doing today and just kind of fly by the seat of your pants and be somewhere for 15 years, you know, 20 years. That's not how it works.
No. There's pros and cons to it, that's for sure. But I think, you know, and that's again, when Zach and I talk about this almost every time we talk, like there's something to not chasing happiness, right? Like if you're in a spot and things are good and you're able to grow and develop, like there's something to be said about that, you know? There's always things that you perceive would be better elsewhere, but yeah, we know for sure. We
don't. Yeah, for sure. So. For sure. And one of the best quotes I had is that, so when I was at Arkansas, we went to the PK80, the Phil Knight 80th birthday invitational. We went to Nike's campus. He spoke to all the teams and he gave you the playbook. I mean, he ran track at Oregon for, you know, a Hall of Fame coach, really tough guy. And he said, you know, athletics is no different than business, you know, in track and field or when I'm making a $1 million deal, every day is not going to be a good day. But what defines you and your success is how you take bad days and make them good. Right. So, I mean, he's one of the most successful guys you'll ever meet. And he's kind of giving you the playbook. So just because you have a bad day or even a bad, you know, phase of training or a bad year. I mean, it's if you want to sustain success over long periods of time, like I look to guys like you and guys that have been around for a while, you don't let those bad days face you, it seems like, you know?
I wish I could say thanks and take credit for that, but I can tell you that there have been some days and times you don't get this gray in your early 40s that stress has not gotten to you a little bit. But no, right. I appreciate that. And I understand what you're saying. And I think that that's really important. You know, you like, there's some long bus rides sometimes, but like, you still got to show up the next day and you got to get these guys ready to go for the next one. And that's what it comes down to.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But listen, Dot, this is great, man. Let me get you out of here with number three, brother. What should people expect from you at the seminar?
Yeah, so I think just going along the lines of, you know, the project we're working on is just a push for in situ evaluation of athletic performance, right? So there's the age-old debate of, you know, a tiger in captivity versus a wild tiger. And trust me, that captivity, having a standardized, repeatable way to assess your athletes in a controlled environment, you will not find a bigger proponent of that than I. However, you have to evaluate the wild tiger at some point, man. You got to get them in the jungle chasing after that gazelle. So I think a push for whatever sport you work in for more of an in situ evaluation in real time and how your athletes function relative to their sporting activity is what I'm going to be talking about, and been a project I've been working on for about 4 or 5 years now.
Rad, dude. I'm so fired up for this. I can't wait to get you down here, man. This is going to be so much fun. Doc, and I appreciate your time, man. It's great to catch up. It's great to see you. I'm glad you're doing great, and we'll be in touch real soon, bud.
Coach, I really appreciate it. And like I said, it's an honor, man. I'm super psyched to, you know, share this journey with everybody. And hey, trust me, I'm going to take in more than I give out that weekend for sure.
It's going to be a blast, brother. Stoked to have you here July 15th and 16th. And as always, man, this is going to be rad. It's great to catch up. I'm glad you're doing awesome. And we'll be in touch real soon, bud.
Perfect. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Coach.
Yeah, man. Cheers.